This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by the sweet lords and ladies of the internet over at squarespace.com. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan, and you're going to get 10% off a brand new beautiful website. Sign up for a year, and you get a free domain name. What beats that? All right, let's podcast. Hello, friends. The grace of God descended upon me this morning, and I woke up early and actually started meditating again. Wow. That's the best thing ever. It's so easy to forget. I get so caught up in my thought patterns. Do you? I get completely fucking lost up there. It's like I get swarmed. My mind becomes like one of those oxen that you see in the nature documentaries that's just covered in flies. My mind becomes like one of the stinking nuggets of shit that my poodle explodes out of his asshole into my yard, and which is inexplicably and suddenly swarmed by millions of flies, as though flies were teleporting in from some alternate horror dimension where there are only flies. It's a different podcast topic, but I really would like to understand exactly how many flies are in every inch of grass, because how do they come? It's like Superman flying to Lois Lane. How do they know it's there? And so many of them all at once. It's a confusing mystery. We'll have to ask Neil deGrasse Tyson. Hopefully one day he will be on my podcast. But here's what happened to me today. I woke up early. I've been forcing myself to get up early. It's wonderful. The morning's incredible. Check it out. You'll really like it. It's still here and it's only gotten better since the last time you saw it. I got up early, got out of bed, was feeling like a god. I did it. Pure discipline. I'm like a Shaolin monk. I just put out a fire with my mind. It's amazing. I stepped into my living room, right into a nice cold puddle of poodle piss. How do I know it was the poodle? Because the poodle was acting guilty. You could just see, you know, a dog knows what it's done. He already had a look on his face that he knew what he had done. He pissed on the floor. And it was, you know, it's just a bad morning feeling to step in poodle piss. And that was the beginning of a tiny little mental avalanche. This is how it goes down. It's what Sharon Salzberg calls add-on. So you have a thing happen. You step in poodle piss. That's all that happened in the universe. That's what happened. You stepped in poodle piss. Your foot went down into some cold piss. And that's it. That's it. But what the mind does after you do that is it starts producing reactionary thoughts. So my mind is like, God damn it. I fucking walk these dogs. I feed these dogs. I give these, it's so embarrassing. I give these dogs food and walks, and this is what they do? They piss on the floor? They don't respect me. Am I not a good dog owner? Do I not walk them enough? I let them out all the time. I hope they're not sick. Maybe one of the poodles sick. Why else would it piss on the floor? It's either that it's sick or it doesn't respect me, or both. Maybe it's sick and it doesn't respect me. Maybe I need to read Caesar Milan. I should look at Caesar Milan more. I'm not really a good dog owner, you know? I should walk the dogs more. I don't walk them enough. Maybe that's the problem. Poor things are cooped up in here all the time. I'm cooped up in here all the time. Why do I stay inside so much? Why am I always inside? I should go outside more. I should exercise more. Why don't I exercise more? God, look how fat I've gotten over this whole winter. I could have exercised. What if I exercised this entire winter? If I had exercised this entire winter, then I bet I would be in really good shape right now. And if I was really in good shape, that would be an indication that I respect my body. Because if I don't respect my body, how do I respect anything? I mean, this is the thing that I'm inside of. I mean, this is the first thing I come in contact with. So I'm not taking care of my body. I should give my body more walks. Why don't I give my body? Am I not compassionate enough? Do I not love enough? What about the cat? The cat, I ignore the cat all the time. The cat doesn't get the love the cat needs. It feels separated. Does it think it's a dog or does it think I'm a cat? What does the cat think? Does the cat only want me to feed it? The cat really doesn't seem interested in anything at all. Why am I not more successful? I should be more successful. I wish I was on TV. I want to be on TV. I should be in movies. Why am I not like in movies all the time? Why am I not in movies like Johnny? I want to be in movies. I want to be a movie star. I want to be a rap, hip-hop, movie star. I want to be like Drake. Why can't I be like Drake? What about DJ Khaled? I want to be a superstar. I want Eminem to invite me to parties. Why can't that happen? What happened to me? Is it my back? My back's hurting. Why does my back hurt? This is how, all from stepping in poodle piss. And this brings us to a reading from the New Testament. The next time you're on acid, you should read the Bible. You'll realize it's incredible and stop being so cynical. When they arrived at the other side of the lake, a demon-possessed man ran out from a graveyard just as Jesus was climbing from the boat. This man lived among the gravestones and had such strength that whenever he was put into handcuffs and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the handcuffs from his wrists and smashed the shackles and walked away. No one was strong enough to control him. All day long and through the night, he would wander among the tombs and in the wild hills, screaming and cutting himself. When Jesus was still far out on the water, the man had seen him and had run to meet him and fell down before him. Then Jesus spoke to the demon within the man and said,
"Come out, you evil spirit."
It gave a terrible scream, shrieking,
"Oh shit, what are you gonna do to me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? For God's sake, don't torture me."
"What is your name?"
And the demon replied,
"Legion, for there are many of us within this man."
Then the demons begged him again and again not to send them to some distant land. Now, as it happened, there was a huge herd of hogs rooting around on the hill above the lake.
"Send us into those hogs,"
the demons begged, and Jesus gave them permission. Then the evil spirits came out of the man and entered the hogs, and the entire herd plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned. That's like a deleted scene from Evil Dead 2. You gotta think about just how gritty and juicy that story is. This isn't a modern graveyard this guy's living in. This is an archaic, crypty graveyard. There's carrion crows flying through the sky. There's open crypts with rotting leper flesh inside of it. There's probably wild dogs running among the overgrown tombs, and it stinks of death. And there in this graveyard is a lunatic screaming at night. They can't chain him down. He's too strong. He keeps breaking the chains. He breaks the manacles. He's unstoppable. And this is what Jesus sails his boat into, and this guy goes running down towards him, which must have been pretty terrifying for anybody who wasn't a man god. Obviously, guys, I hate that I even have to say this. Do I think this is real or mythology? I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Personally, I do think that it is a emanation of some kind of super intelligence that has grown out of time in this symbolic form. But do I think there was this thing actually happened? Yeah, it's happening right now. It happens whenever you get caught in your thoughts. It happens every single time that you get caught. So this is a story that I love because it's a story about grace, which is that when you get caught in your thoughts, something happens. Something appears on the shore of the graveyard that you're living in. And that's the other thing. If you're caught up in your thoughts, you're not in the present moment. So you're living in a graveyard. You're living in a field of death and markers, symbols, things that represent something but aren't the thing itself. If you're in the present moment, you're in the thing. You're feeling the thing. The sun is hitting you. You feel the moment. You're alive. You're here. I like this place. But if you're up in your head, it's just a bunch of rotting doom. It's crows and vultures, and you're screaming secretly inside. And so that moment where something comes paddling up to your shore and says hi, and you say, "Ah, I don't want to die." That's the other thing. The funny thing is the demons, in this story, they say, don't torture me. And what's crazy is in this story, Jesus is compassionate to the demons and gives them what they want, which is to go into hogs. I don't understand that part necessarily. But the hogs drowned in the same water that Jesus was sailing on. And that's really fucking cool too. Because this is that Joseph Campbell quote, the psychotic drowns in the same waters in which the mystic swims with delight. So it's interesting, right? And maybe it means if you get too caught up in your thoughts, you'll drown in the moment or something. I don't know. I don't understand that part. But I do love this idea that anytime you get completely lost in your head, there's this moment where you can come back to the present moment. And this is, to keep quoting Sharon Salzberg, the idea that the healing is in the return. So it doesn't matter if you've been lost in the graveyard of your mind for the last few months. It doesn't matter if it's been years. It doesn't matter how long it's been that you've been in this uncontrolled state of lunacy. At any given moment, you can sit down, light a candle. You don't need a candle, but if you have one, it's cool. Light some incense, sit down, and breathe. And that is an incredible moment. That moment can lead to a great many wonderful things. And so it was really cool because today, thank God, instead of letting myself get sucked into what could have been a never-ending vortex of shitty thoughts for weeks, I remembered, oh yeah, okay. All we got to do is just sit down and breathe. Just sit down and breathe and see what happens. And I did that. And it sort of worked. Am I having like the ultimate day of all time? No. It's a pretty normal day. But is it a terrible day? Absolutely not. Did I go back to bed? Because I'm like, fuck this. I stepped in poodle piss. It's over. No. No. It's really a beautiful thing. You should give it a shot. Every once in a while, whenever you really get freaked out and you start screaming out there in the cemetery of your mind, follow Kendrick Lamar's advice in his incredible song about meditation. Sit down, bitch. Be humble. You'll be amazed at the effects that it has when the spirit of the universe in the form of the present moment comes paddling up to the cemetery of your discursive mind. We got a great podcast for you today. Johnny Pemberton is here. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. My friends, we live in the golden age of web design. It's not like what it used to be, where you'd have to go plodding off into some poisonous swamp and blow certain calls, and a web designer would emerge from the forest, and maybe he would be good, or maybe he would be a mutant spider that had polymorphed into human form to trick you. He would drag you into the swamp, put you in a web and slowly wrap acidic silk around your body while your screams echoed through the forest, only heard by the squirrels and giant rats that lived in that muddy, hellish place. But now you can go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off a brand new, beautiful website. Squarespace is incredible. My website is made with Squarespace. I use Squarespace. You know, I actually had to put Squarespace to the test recently because I screwed up and didn't have the right link for a podcast, and I was not around a computer, and so I had to like go on my phone. I'm like, shit, what if this doesn't work? What if something goes wrong? But it's perfect. You can edit your website from your phone. Everything just works. It's wonderful. If you want to build a website and you want to do it fast and you want it to be easy, Squarespace is the place for you. They have beautiful templates with customizable settings, seamless commerce tools. That means that if you have something that you want to sell online, they've got everything you need to do it. If you sign up for a year, you get a free custom domain name, and they have incredible customer support. So it's great. I use it. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. Witness the glory of Squarespace. If you're thinking of starting a podcast, if you want to sell your stinky socks online or document your UFO abduction, Squarespace has everything that you need. I use it for my website. There's nothing else to say. It works perfectly, and I love them. Remember, go to Squarespace.com, show your support, use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off your first order. Much thanks to those noble folks out there who continue to use the DTFH Amazon link. Anytime you go through that link, which is all over DuncanTrussell.com, it's in the lower left-hand corner, it's in the comments section of any of these, any episode, it's everywhere. Anything you buy on Amazon, they will give us a very small percentage of, and it costs you nothing. I love Amazon. I just ordered a hanging chair, which is fantastic. I just dangle on my fire escape and stare out at New York, and it feels decadent and wonderful. There's lots of other great ways for you to support this podcast. A brand new way for you to support the podcast, a true way for you to become an actual patron of the DTFH. We are now connected to patreon.com. If you go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe to us, and there's a bunch of different tiers, you get the same thing no matter what tier you sign up for. Much thanks to you guys out there signing up for the $10 tier. That's amazing. That's how much it costs to sign up for Apple Music with their infinite music library. So I really appreciate it. But I appreciate all folks who are subscribing. What you'll get is extra episodes of the podcast, stuff that I'm kind of like embarrassed about. Sometimes I do these really long rants and I don't know where to put them. It's all there. It's going to be there for you. There's already two mini episodes up there right now for you that you can check out. And there's going to be many more. So please, if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/DTFH. I've got some live stuff coming up. I'm going to be at the Bell House July 18th. That's the Bell House in Brooklyn. Tickets are available at DuncanTrussell.com. Also, if you want to go really crazy with me, why not come to the Ram Dass retreat, which is happening in December? And I think tickets are on sale for that now. If you want to come to Hawaii, swim around in the ocean, get some spiritual downloads, get super high on the, I don't know what, on the Shakti floating in the air there, then check it out. Come to the Ram Dass Spring Retreat. I am going to be there. Also, if you happen to be listening to this on Thursday, June 22nd, which is the day I released it, check out Viceland. I did this animated story for a show called Party Legends, where I tell the story of the time I got a dominatrix, and it looks really cool, really creepy. Lance Bangs did a great job. It's pretty cool. I hope you'll watch it. So I guess that's it, man. We've got a great podcast for you today. You've seen today's guest on the show, Son of Zorn. He's got two fantastic podcasts, Twisting the Wind and Live to Tape, and he's going to be doing live shows at the Satellite in Los Angeles. I'll have links to that in the comments section of this episode. He's been on the podcast a few times before, and I consider him one of the greatest humans on planet Earth. Everyone, please welcome back to the DTFH, Johnny Pemberton.
I'm here with Gary Timps, forensic investigator. Gary, how many murder scenes have you been at?
Well, that's a good question, actually. How many murder scenes have I been at, or how many times have I seen a murder?
I guess it's...
You mean murder scenes.
Well, you know, like how many times have you been had to turn on that light and throw the luminol down and just check for semen?
You're asking me how many times I've had to wash body fluid off my shoes?
Well, at a crime scene.
Yeah, over about 470 times, probably.
My God. And how do you deal with that? The stress. You must have nightmares. I bet you shit blood at night.
Actually, to tell you the truth, if I don't see a murder in 1 week, you know how some people are addicted to exercise and said such, whatnot, and have you? I'm that way with the murder. If I don't see a murder in a week, I'd go darn near crazy and start ripping the insulation out of the walls and chewing on it with my bare feet.
So you're saying you are addicted to crime scenes.
I am 100% addicted to crime scenes.
That is so dangerous. I mean, what happens if a week goes by and there hasn't been a murder or some kind of violent act for you to investigate?
I get on a flight and I go to where it's happening.
Like Syria? So, you go out of the country or where?
Sometimes. Well, typically the best place to go is to Central America. Mm-hmm. A lot of murders there. Not a lot of people care to investigate them. But I just show up. I'm like, hey, if I got my sunglasses on, got a hat on that looks official. Yeah. They just assume, and I bring an interpreter with me. I mean, I'm out of pocket at this point, mind you. I'm out of pocket.
Can you describe to me your favorite crime scene that you've ever been at?
My favorite crime scene at all time was at a chocolate factory. And this was incredible because it took weeks to decide what was chocolate and what was dry blood. Because this was a very remote chocolate factory. It was out in the middle of Montana. Mm. And used to be a missile silo. So no one found out until a full year after the crime.
Why in the name of daylight would they put a chocolate factory in a secret missile silo?
Well, it was some old man's dream. He got off the grid and faked his death. And he conscripted a bunch of foreign workers to come in from Uzbekistan to work for him on foreign visas. And they all had some sort of communication breakdown in the missile silo because he was independently wealthy at the time of he faked his death. Mm. He pretended to act. The funny thing is I investigated his death where he pretended to have a truck fall on him, and he actually had a young boy who delivered newspapers to the house. He was the one who was killed by the truck falling.
How the heck? So you're saying when they looked, I just don't understand how you could mistake a young boy's supple body, recently jellified by a truck, for an old man or even an adult's body. Can you explain?
Fire was there was a wicked fire that raged through there and wiped out just about every piece of evidence there was. And I did not mistake it. I presented my evidence, and that's how I was able to find. I was the one who found the missile silo. I tracked him down.
You tracked him down. How many years did you spend on this man's trail?
19 and a half, sir.
19 and a half years. And every week during that time, you were also investigating other murder scenes?
That's true. Sorry about that. I'm currently in a silo myself.
You are in a silo. Now, you live an interesting life. You are America's top forensic investigator. You have solved...
Top independent forensic investigator.
America's top independent forensic investigator. You have solved the Williamsburg cutlery attack. You were the man who uncovered the 17 corpses of the Gornash twins.
Uh-huh. I also solved Taco Dixon.
And you solved Taco Dixon, but I must say... And I'm just speaking, I respect you, but speaking on behalf of everyone on planet Earth, a lot of people think you kind of dropped the ball on the JonBenet Ramsey investigation. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about where you think you went wrong and what your theories are on what happened that night in the JonBenet Ramsey household.
Well... Let me just get off the bat here and say that I was very close to the Ramsey family before the murder. And a lot of people don't know this, but the former president Barack Obama was also quite good friends with the Ramseys as well.
Right.
This is where it starts to get weird, hard, and difficult to talk about.
And that's the name of the book you just released, Weird, Hard, and Difficult, Diving into the Underworld of America's Favorite Murders by America's Top Independent Forensic Investigator. That's available at bookstores and on Amazon.com, folks. Go ahead. Just wanted to plug your book, bud.
I'll tell you where it sells the best is in airports. People love getting on a flight and digging into that one.
I believe you. I mean, I've read it 3 times already. I just love it. I love the pictures in there, full color, glistening shots of some of the mm-hmm. most grisly crime scenes that I have ever seen mm-hmm. in my life.
Yeah, we took special care. We actually had an Instagram expert come in and enhance those. We had them come in and enhance them to make them extra dark.
Are you transmuting right now?
Well, sometimes I get a little thing. I picked up a weird type of, you know how Brittany Murphy and her husband died?
No.
They died of an advanced form of Legionnaire's disease, which is an airborne scum sucker, a.k.a. mold.
I've heard about that now. Okay, I know what you mean. You're talking about the crumps. Yeah.
Yep, good old crump cough.
Now, yeah, I've got, you know, I'll tell you, I'm a Legionnaire's survivor. Very rare. I was covered in pox. They had to use a UV light or a fluorescent light bulb to extract the larva in the fungus from my body. And there was almost nothing left of me on that table after that.
That's terrifying. Yeah, I had a similar procedure called snippet grafts. So they take little grafts of skin and snippets, many thousands of them. It's similar to a Malaysian crocodile coming of man experience where a boy is cut up, his entire body is cut to create small cuts, but many thousands of cuts that sometimes can cause a systemic reaction of pure shock and the boy dies. Hence, not a man, probably actually had a latent vagina underneath the penis, which is very common in certain countries where they have tadpole water they're drinking for lunch and dinner. But I had snippet grafts done on my left extremity. It's just the left side because of the right brain interference and such. And it was successful, and I've been able to pretty much get by with daily fluctuations. But otherwise, I'm pretty much okay because that's sort of the snippet grafts allow the bacteria and the mold to intermix and sort of they live just in a small protected colony in the vocal cords.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Sure.
Let's talk circumcision. You're against it, and yet you still perform circumcisions. This paradox has everyone scratching their heads.
I insist upon performing circumcisions because I feel like it's something where if I don't perform the circumcision, who's going to do it?
Well, but you are a circumcision activist. You run clinics at Burning Man that replace people's foreskins. You've been criticized by the UN. You were arrested for 7 nights in Dallas for performing 15 illegal foreskin attachment operations on 12-year-olds in a gymnasium. This is a really controversial topic, and even mm-hmm. now you're in hiding in Uruguay.
Well, believe me, I'm not actually in Uruguay. I'm in a different country. But Uruguay, I could go to Uruguay, but obviously that's where I say I am. I'm not in Uruguay, let's put it that way. But yes, it's a very controversial procedure. It's something that people don't seem to understand how important the foreskin is. Many cultures used to use it as a drinking cup.
Yes.
Known as if you don't have that drinking cup, then how are you to establish yourself in the totem of wisdom, which we all know comes from the fountains of drinking water? Hydrogen bonded with oxygen is an ancient idea that the Sumerians counteracted, and that's how they were able to take over such a large landmass as they did, because of their penile drinking cups.
Well, this sounds like a beautiful ritual. How could you be so opposed to circumcision? And yet be so familiar with the cultural practice of drinking from cups made of foreskin?
Well, the foreskin cups traditionally were still attached to the penis. They used a special stretching bowl made of a very dense type of wood that actually does not exist anymore. It's known as Harper's wood.
I see.
Because typically you would make a harp out of this wood, and it was so strong it could hold many thousands of strings at an angle that even iron can't accomplish today. So Harper's wood was used to stretch out the foreskin, so you had a very large vessel, some of them holding as many as 10 or 11 gallons of water.
Dear God. This is
the penis. The penis is designed for this. No one knows this. The penis is designed to have a linear strength of holding several hundred pounds.
Can you, we're going to have to cut to a commercial real quick.
Okay.
But when we get back, I want to talk about your theory that the government has been collecting samples of foreskin to create a warrior creature that they intend to unleash in Iran. We're going to jump right back. But first, let's do a cut to a commercial break.
No problem.
Every single moment of your life has been wasted. Stop breathing. Breathing is destroying you. Call 1-800-479-3216 right now to understand 6 methods to stop breathing forever and stop wasting your life.
Breathing is the problem. Breath is coming in. Breathing is the problem. The air is not your friend. It'll get you in the end. It'll get you in the end.
We're back. So, this idea that the United States government has this idea. Was that on your side or my side?
Because we've got these roaches all over the place.
This place sucks. We've got these roaches all over the beams. They chew into our electrical equipment. I can't tell up from down when the things start messing with our sound. Now, was that you or me?
That was him. That was him. That was God.
Okay, that's good to hear. As long as I've
had an issue of God doing lip rips.
Jerry, can you do me a favor and take a quick look at the God frequency on here? Make sure we've got the lip rip things. You know what? We've got a caller calling in right now. Do you mind taking a call?
No problem.
Hold on 1 second here. And while we wait for the call to come through, one thing we didn't quite, you didn't answer the main question I have for you is, what is your evidence that the United States government is harvesting the foreskin of children as a weapon of war? Can you talk about that while we get this call in?
Well, I would point to the Magumra incident that happened in 1996 in Tucson, Arizona. It was a very hot summer in Tucson, an unseasonably hot summer in Tucson, which if you've been to Tucson, you understand that's quite hot. I am a desert person. I do like the desert, but you will notice that an unseasonably hot summer in Tucson is really going to bake you. It's going to send you there.
Got it.
Hey, we got the caller in. Caller, you're on the air with Pell Pampson, anti-circumcision investigator, top forensic investigator, and he's here. What questions do you have?
God entered my body like a body my same size.
Hold on, I don't think you came through. Can you say that one more time, please?
I heard something, but I'm ready to hear it again, yes.
God entered my body like a body my same size.
Okay,
so the caller's saying that God entered his body like a body the same size. I think I understand what he's referencing there. I think he's referencing Testament scripture, that is, Acts 2, verse 2, line 38.
Hold on, caller. Let him finish, please.
Okay.
No, you go. The caller interrupted.
Oh, sorry. What he's talking about there, the body of the same size. I was talking about the Montgomery incident in Tucson. And God, that was something...
Hold on, caller. Caller, if you keep interrupting, we're going to hang up on you, okay? Go ahead, sorry.
Well, the Montgomery incident was something where we think we saw the first modern example, post-Sumerian example, of a full foreskin cloak.
God entered into my body, just, hold like on, a body let him my finish. Same size, like me floating into you, or you floating into me. Mm. I just quenched because he ripped my lips a little bit more. He's ripping my lips, ripping my face.
Okay, thank you, caller. Have you heard anything like this before? God ripping people's lips or in face?
The rip-lipping is incredibly common. A lot of times what happens is people will have their penis touched by God, and the God will tell the person's brain that this is the lips, because the lips obviously is a more or less sensitive, well, technically more sensitive, it is a less culturally sensitive orifice to be touched. So God will rip the lips when actually God is ripping the foreskin to... which I have called now the Megumra effect because of the Megumra incident, because it harkens back to a more recent example of full foreskin cloaking where the God effect takes over. And some people in a certain state will confuse this with the Holy Spirit takeover, because like he's the caller saying, he's feeling a body of the same size enter him.
Yeah.
Well, that is the idea with the foreskin, is it's able to cloak the entire body. So it feels like it's a second body of the same size that you're inside of, when in fact, you're being cloaked.
Okay, let's cut to bypass.
Johnny, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. How are you, man?
Hi.
Man...
I'm good.
That was fun. Taking a page from your book. That's like a Pemberton podcast. That was your podcast. That wasn't my podcast.
Well, I mean, it kind of was, and it can be, because it's not like you can do that with everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I definitely don't do that with everybody, because it's not really possible.
Oh, I get it. So you don't do like long form vocoded improv with a lot of your guests.
No, some people just aren't comfortable with that, and they wouldn't know what to do. I think it would be like fully scared. Sometimes I do that, and I'll have them participate, and they'll jump in. But it's definitely we reached a different level a long time ago, I feel like.
Johnny, you just returned from South Africa. You were shooting a movie out there for how many months? Mm-hmm.
I guess I was there for almost 3 months, yeah.
3 months?
About 3 months.
3 months, yeah, out there with Vince Vaughn.
With Vince Vaughn. not with Vince Vaughn, but Johnny Knoxville is the main
person. I get those two mixed up every fucking time.
That's kind of funny, actually. There is sort of like they do have like a similar thing to some extent. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely, you're not missing a mark, really, by saying that.
Is Johnny Knoxville true? Like, he seems like a maniac, like an actual dyed-in-the-wool maniac. Is that what he's like? Like,
no, I don't think he's a maniac. I think he's kind of got like he's got this lifestyle where he really likes doing things that are stunt based, and it feels really good, and because it's comfortable, because it's like this thing when you get injured or when you do something like that, it really has this thing where it puts you in the moment like nothing else, you know?
Yes, absolutely. You know, in a very, very tiny, minuscule, small way. I know that feeling because I just started bicycling around New York, mm-hmm. and I went into there's a neighborhood. It's really weird when you're cycling out here. There's a Hasidic Jew neighborhood.
Right.
And the moment you cross into that
Crown
zone,
Heights, right?
Crown Heights. I think, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's another dimension.
You're in a time portal.
You're in a time portal. And like this, and so like I'm blissfully riding through. I go into that area, and man, I got fucking like pinned in between two Jewish school buses.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah. With
pinned?
Like,
what do you mean pinned?
Well, they were both kind of like, I got in them. There were these two school buses.
Oh,
my bike
them.
Was in the middle, smack dab in the middle. And like they had Hebrew writing. And I was so happy because it's so fun to ride around. I was like, well, mm-hmm. if I fucking die, this is a pretty cool place to die.
Right.
But I didn't die. But it did the rush when I got out of that mess. The fucking rush was so absolutely incredible. Like, it was just
It
feels great, man.
It's very pure.
It's very pure. So that's, he's like a, what do they call it? He's an adrenaline junkie.
I guess so, yeah. I think to some extent he probably is an adrenaline junkie, yeah. I suppose so. I mean, I didn't watch all that Jackass stuff, but it's definitely, those guys did that for a long time, so all of them have this it became their life as opposed to a part of their life. Like 100% was, it's like who became who they were.
What's the movie about?
It's about this place in New Jersey that used to exist called Action Park. It's this old amusement park. It's not so much amusement park. It is like a, I don't know what you call it, like a place that has water rides and has like go-karts. And it's like a carnival kind of, but it's this place that's really famous. It actually used to be called Traction Park because so many people would be injured in the park because it was one of these places where, I mean, people loved it. It was like a super, it was incredibly beloved place where you could kind of do whatever you want because the people who ran the place were all like 17, 18, 19. That age, they're all like, just fuck off, who gives a shit, party, drink, smoke, weed kind of people. So it just had this real atmosphere of anything goes and you can't get in trouble. And so people loved it for that reason because it was just really, there's no one telling you to like to slow down or like to, there's no one trying to keep you safe other than what you did yourself. So, I mean, actually, I think 6 people died in the park.
Oh, my fucking... How is that possible? How do you keep running a park if after one person dies?
I think it's this thing where you have a fucking sign or something in front that says, you're not responsible for... I mean, it's not like... This is a movie about that. It's not directly about it, but it's inspired by it, like... heavily inspired by the true events of that park, but I don't know how the Wikipedia for Action Park is hilarious because it's all this stuff that you can't believe actually went on. So I mean,
That's kind of like kind of what Burning Man is like, you know, because people every year get people die, you know, every year.
They do? What do they die from usually? Dehydration or something?
The one that I heard of that's, I mean, it's all so tragic and fucked up. One of them,
yeah,
a guy fell asleep in the deep playa and got run over by an art car.
That's kind of funny in a weird and a terrible way.
In a terrible way, man. And
it's hilarious, really.
And then the most grim one that I heard was... a guy hung himself out of his RV, and
it looked like art.
Yeah, they thought it was art, and he hung there for a while, and nobody did anything. And then there's like, you know, there's all kinds of like other like little mini disasters that happen. You know, for example, somebody will dive off of something and break their neck, or you know, there's they have a full hospital there. They have yes. There's a hospital there because, you know, I guess someone got their fingers cut off this last year in a...
That's got to happen like every 10 minutes, I feel like, with all those vehicles and things.
Raining fingers.
Yeah, it's not Burning Man until you lose a finger.
But, I mean, there is that element of knowing. I mean, it's not like you're going to Electric Daisy Carnival. It's not like you're going to some controlled environment. Like you're going on the website, they just say this is a survival experience. You can get severely hurt out here. You can get really injured. You have to be so careful. You're not just going camping. You can, mm-hmm. you know, so that makes it fun. So I guess this park, it probably felt the same way. It felt wild.
Exactly, yeah. It just felt like there's no rules, and it didn't feel like you were being cared for. Like, oh, don't get hurt, don't get hurt. Because you want to have fun because you're whatever age you are, and you want to fucking drink a beer and take the brakes off and go crazy and shit.
What year was this?
Well, the movie takes place in 1979, which is kind of like the height of the park. So this is also a time when, it's a different time. It was a different time. It was 1979.
This was before they started... just cracking down on everything. This is before the age of like where people just started suing
lawsuits. Yeah, before lawsuits, before anything, before like, I mean, I'm sure like you could drive drunk.
Right.
All kinds of stuff back then.
Right, I forgot about that. There was a time where you could drive around with a beer, and it was kind of normal. It was like driving around with a Coke or something. You could just
a beer, just a road soda, officer. So, officer, just a beer. Okay, get on out here now. Get on out.
But there was never a time where you could drive drunk. I mean, surely there, like you always like you. There must have always been some. They probably just the blood alcohol level you could have is diminished.
Where you wouldn't get in that much trouble. You know, as long as you don't kill anyone, you would just be, oh, you're drunk. Okay, you're gonna come home with me.
Carrie,
we'll put you in the tank.
Carrie, just drive home. Where are you going?
What are you doing out here? How many beers you have at the softball game? All right.
We're gonna follow you home. What are you doing? All right.
When I was growing up, there was a guy in Minnesota who went on the wrong way on the highway and killed someone, or maybe I don't know if he killed someone. He got in an accident, and he said he was at a softball game, and he only had 15 beers. I remember thinking as a kid, like, how could you even physically drink that much liquid? And now I'm like, oh yeah, I could see that happening. I could see like taking some Adderall and maybe I drank 12 beers.
Easily. Yeah, I know, man, I can remember like
so funny.
One of my friends when I was a kid, you know, is talking about, man, my dad drinks a six pack a night. And I was like, what the fuck? A six pack? Is it Jesus Christ, how? And now it's
you're like easily.
Easily over dinner before the main course comes.
Yeah. Like, where does it all go? All the alcohol. It's crazy how much you can drink.
Man, that world that you're describing, I think it's a better world. That world sounds so much more fun. You know, like the distant past, you know, mm-hmm. the era of no prohibition of drugs. Where you could go, I mean, no cars, horses, access to morphine and opium anywhere.
Well, that's a different era altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful era. If you go back to that time, I just went to this place called Mackinac Island. You ever heard of that place?
Oh, yeah. It's in Michigan.
That's right. Have you ever been?
There's no cars, just golf carts, a lot of saltwater
taffy.
No
golf carts. I saw no golf carts.
Well, I think they have some golf carts, maybe for the cops or something.
I think the cops were on bikes. I didn't see a single golf. I did see scooters with like morbidly obese people kind of and like elderly people. Mm-hmm. But mostly
did
just.
Did you love it?
Yes. Yes. Like my theory right now is just that the worst thing that ever happened to planet Earth was cars.
Oh, it's terrible. It's like, it's something that's hard to, you can't overstate it because it's so endemic. It's such a part of culture that you just can't even believe. Like a universe without them doesn't even make sense really to most people.
No, they've never even thought of that. Many people have never even thought of that. The idea of a carless society. But,
oh, it'd be so cool.
But it's crazy because, you know, it's you know, they run on death. They run on, you know, compressed forest matter from might as well be from another dimension.
It's basically magic. They run on magic.
They run on magic. And I wish it was magic. But you know what I mean? They're just, cars are a plague. They're a plague. And people don't realize it, and they don't understand it. But they're the most. But when you go to Mackinac Island, mm-hmm. and it's just, you know, the clopping of horse hooves going down that sound, clop 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 clop, and you think that's what it. You know, that used to be the sound. That
I
want to
go
it.
Now,
dude. It's wonderful. It is wonderful.
When I was growing up, my friends would go there all the goddamn time, and they would always bring back saltwater taffy from Mackinac Island.
Well, they call us fudgies, you know. People who go there are called fudgies because we always buy the fudge. Yeah, tourists are called fudgies out there.
Because all they want is fudge.
Yeah.
God, yep. I hate fudge. Fudge is the dumbest fucking thing ever. Why? What do people want with fudge? I don't understand fudge. I've never understood fudge. I remember trying it from Mackinac Island from my friend Tom Piddleco. His family would go there and always bring back saltwater taffy and fudge. And I tried the fudge. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is just frosting. It's just frosting. Isn't it? What is fudge? Just like the most condensed version of. It's just the worst. Who fucking figured that out? Like, you know, you know, what do you want? You know, you want a cookie? You don't want a cake? How about the whole fucking thing? You just want the filling. You just want the icing. Give me a fucking brick of icing.
Well,
just fucking icing. You love it, don't you?
I know. I mean, I can't eat fudge. If I ate one bite of fudge, I would gain 18 fucking pounds instantly. If I just took one bite, my head would swell up. I'd look like Rush Limbaugh when he was fat. I can't touch it. But we went into a fudge making, you know, there's like 17 different fudge stores there.
A fudgery.
We went into a fudgery and we watched fudge being made, and the guy making it had the most severe, serious look on his face, like he was making penicilling or something.
Severe burn or severe psoriasis. he had both. His left side of his face had a severe burn. His right side had terrible psoriasis. A fudgeman.
It's a
most
fudgeman.
Fudgemen develop psoriasis, if not a burn.
He's got a fudgeman's face. You can tell he makes fudge by the look of his face. Half psoriasis, half third-degree burns.
Here's a fudgeman, all right. I'll tell you who's the fudgeman.
I know a fudgeman when I see a fudgeman. That fudge. Man's been working at the fudge. But it was very serious, you know. It was weird. He wouldn't really smile. And what he was doing was just like, it was like he was just smearing poop on metal, you know. It was just this like poop and with nuts in it, just smearing it out over and letting it cool. Smells fucking great, though, man.
Oh.
But this...
It's liquid. It's pure calories. It's basically just the most dense form of calories that exists.
Yeah, don't act like this is normal, by the way. Like, on Mackinac Island, they act like fudge is normal. Like, stop acting like this is like... It's like what they do with, like, eating turkey on Thanksgiving. It's like, this isn't normal. This is fucking weird. Like, you guys have, like... You're eating pulped chocolate, basically. When you experience a carless place, the air is fresher,
mm-hmm.
the sounds are better. It's just beautiful. And then when you're driving around after that and you look at those sweet swaths of highway and imagine them without cars and just bicycles or people walking or horses or trains, you realize we are so close to being in heaven. That's heaven.
Yeah.
That's
really
heaven.
Is. It's great. Also, there's this thing where I always think about when I'm driving, because I like to look around a lot. I like to like look at things and just like, I just love not driving and just looking out the window and seeing stuff. But there's this thing that a lot of people talk about, like urbanists and stuff, my old boy, James Howard Kunstler, and all of his cronies. They always talk about how when you're driving, you're going so fast, even if you're going just like 20 miles an hour, even 15, you just can't see stuff. You don't see things. So you can't see things because you're going too fast by them. And you also just, even if you do see something, you can't see it at the same level. So what happens, that's why everything looks like shit in places where cars drive by, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to look good, because you couldn't fucking see it in the first place if it did, and no one cares because you can't see it. Because if I'm on my bike, I always see stuff like, oh, I would never have seen this. I would have never noticed this weird ass log that's sticking out of the ground, and just anything that's novel. You wouldn't see it when you're in a car because you just don't have the time. Your brain and eyes can't input things fast enough to enjoy them when you're moving that quickly. So it just creates this, it has the effect, the side effect of all urban planning in a car and car areas just looks like shit, because it has to accommodate the cars, and to accommodate the cars it can't accommodate things that typically that would be enjoyable to like a pedestrian.
Well, that's right. Yeah, they absolutely. Car culture is pure selfishness.
Yeah, well, it's 100% selfishness, but that's just how it is, right? I mean, it's like that thing where, because my old roommates and stuff were really into the whole transit culture in L.A. back in the day, and they ran a blog all about it. Like, this is early days of blogging, and it was always people would comment they'd always post all the news for all the transit news, and this was back when there was now it's actually happening. There's going to be a train that goes to the beach down like the Wilshire corridor of LA, which is like the main most densely populated section of the city.
It's great.
And all these people were opposed to it for all the reasons people were opposed to stuff like NIMBYism. You know what NIMBYism is?
No.
NIMBY stands for not in my backyard.
Oh, right.
So, like, that's the word they call when someone's like, oh, what? No, I love trains. I just, you know, it shouldn't go through Cheviot here. It shouldn't go through here because this is, you know, it's my backyard. I don't want to have this thing happen. So all the NIMBYs and stuff. And there was this one, some person proposed this plan, which to me is like one of the funniest things I've ever fucking heard in my entire life, is that there would be, I mean, this is a legit thing that I think someone also took forward to make it a joke, is the train would have special apparatus so you can basically hook your car onto it and you can take it with you. So you can have, like, for a price, you can, like, you can convey your car on the underneath the train in some sort of special carriage.
Oh, my God.
So you can have your fucking car as you're on public transit.
Man, that is so fucking insane, man.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, the thing that, like, by the way, for folks, guys, I've just drove a car around. I'll drive a car again.
Me too.
We got to get from point A to point B. Right now, our distances are too stretched out. That's a problem.
Yeah.
But I won't drive a car as much, and I won't take fucking public transit even now that I have my bike out here, because it's a biker's paradise. New York is a bicycle fucking paradise. After you've been in L.A., which is like apocalypse now for bikes, at least the part that I lived in, there's no bike lane. But if there's bike lanes, they're in. It's just a weird place to ride a bike. But in New York,
certain places are good, but for the most part, it's you become very defensive.
You have to be very defensive there. Yeah, you're smacking cars, you're freaking out, people are screaming at you. People there don't yet understand bikes as being a serious. There are people there who don't understand that bikes are like an actual mode of transportation. Like,
yeah, they also don't understand how easy it is to die.
Right. Yeah.
It's like anything on my bike, I'm just like, hey, I don't care what happens. Just don't kill me. Just don't fucking kill me is all I care about.
That's right. And you see the white bikes chained up out here. What's beautiful is they've got these fucking bike lanes here, man. Like, like over the Williamsburg Bridge and it going into Manhattan. I don't know which bridge it is, but they have these like just basically bike highways. That you can just, you're not even next to a car. It's all pedestrians and bikes. It's fucking cool, man. It's fucking cool. But the thing you start realizing is like cars, they're lazy boys, right? Like a car seat is a lazy boy. It's a reclining chair with AC blasting into your face. It's like sitting in a lazy boy with an air conditioner 3 feet away from your face.
It's 100%. Wait till we get to the self-driving cars, because it's going to happen. It's going to happen, I feel like, at some point, right? And there's some universe that's going to happen. And that's just going to be just like your fucking personal portable masturbatorium you take to take where? I don't know where you're going to go, I guess. I kind of feel like there's going to be some sort of maybe a upset, or what do you call that when something gets flipped on its head? Like some great word for it. So maybe a supplant that will supplant it, because it's like this thing where, okay, if you can go anywhere without having to drive, you can basically just like sit in this thing, and once they become really good, essentially it's kind of like it's going to become like this thing where we'll start to kind of have trains all over again. Because think about it, if you're like in a car and it's driving you someplace, do you really just want to sit there by yourself and have nothing to do? Because like your left brain is not being occupied, so you're kind of going to go a little crazy. And that's what, like, I feel like I have to have like a book when I'm in an Uber, because I get kind of crazy because I feel like I'm not driving, so I'm not doing anything. So I want to be consumed, because otherwise I'm just sitting there waiting, thinking about, oh, why is he making a left here? I would make a left later, but I'm not going to say that because I don't want to be fucking backseat driver. And there's all this shit I start thinking about. So I want to have like a book with me. So I feel like eventually with the self-driving cars, they'll start having self-driving buses. Maybe they'll have a little bar in there. Have some sort of thing. So eventually it becomes these things that are essentially just what trains used to be. just yeah. more efficient and
battery
more
powered,
fun,
maybe way faster, better, yeah. way better. With that, I would much prefer that, some kind of modulated, pulsing, electronic, like river of like living rooms, little mini living rooms,
exactly,
floating
yeah.
by, you know, with like, you know, a couch in there, a bed or whatever. That's cool. I like that. But it's like with cars, this is the thing, man. If you analyze, just ask yourself the next time you find yourself behind the wheel, do you want to be going where you're going, right? Just a simple yes or no. Like if you could choose to not go there, you know, like if there was a way for you to not have to go to wherever you're going in the car, yeah. would you go? And the answer is 80% of the time, fuck no. Fuck no, I would not be going to work. Fuck no, I would not be going to...
I know you definitely wouldn't, for sure.
Fuck no, I'm not going to be driving to go get to run fucking errands. Remember, do you remember, like, the horror of your mother taking you to do errands on a Saturday?
Oh, God.
Do you remember
it's
that?
Like, it's just unbelievable. Like, this is... why don't you not do that?
And it's the first... It's your first taste of adult life. You don't realize
errands.
That. You don't realize it, but it's just like your mom wakes you up. It's like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. She pops you in the fucking car, and you're going to spend the whole fucking day going to buy boring shit. She's going to buy like some clippers for the yard, and she, you know what I mean? Or she's going to buy some bread at the grocery store, and then after that, she's going to go and she's going to pick up like... I don't know if like a duvet cover or something, you know, like a mm-hmm. comforter. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be like a never ending series of awful stops in a ultimately like a meaningless day that could have been when you're a kid. You're like, why are we could be outside. We could be watching fucking HBO. Why are we doing this?
Yeah. You could be doing 1,000 things that are super fun and great and feel really good, as opposed to definitely sucks.
So this
to
is
run errands.
When you realize that you look out at the river of cars and you realize most of these people, they don't want to be in the car. They're not evil. They don't want to be commuting. They don't want to be going wherever. They don't want to run the errand. They don't want to be picking people up to take them to the airport. They don't want to be going to the airport. But they're doing it. So it's like it's suffering. Like it's the manifestation of suffering. It'd be one thing if everyone was driving to like orgies, parties.
Like a road trip is obviously very different. But
yes.
I've never been sad on one of those.
Never.
Except maybe when I shit my pants. But even then it wasn't that bad.
You shit your pants on a road trip?
Yeah. I didn't like shit my pants. I think I almost shit my pants. Maybe I had some shit in my pants from before. This was like, it wasn't really a road trip. It wasn't like something where I was in charge with friends and we were listening to music and stuff. You know, that's like a different thing. I've never had anything really bad happen then. I've only had just like been super tired and then been not super tired because I took the world's greatest nap and then go to a gas station and had like... Oh, that shit's so different though. Yeah, it's totally different when you're traveling. Like when we were on the road together. Anytime I've been on the road with doing comedy stuff, it's like such a different thing.
It's way way different. Yeah, or you know, even like anytime you're just like cruising somewhere for no reason, it's the reason that fucks shit up. You know, mm-hmm. it's like I gotta get here, whatever the place is. I gotta get, and it's stealing the pleasure. So it's like it's weird when you consider the phases that we've gone through. You know, like I've been thinking about the past is kind of like the San Andreas Fault or something, or what's the name of that deep the Marianas Trench. So yeah, I've been thinking of the past as like the Marianas Trench, and like when you like ascribe like altitude to time, it becomes really fascinating because it's like when you're looking at like something from a long time ago, whatever it is, and its age has affected it, right? So like mm-hmm. the time space continuum has kind of like sapped out of it its color. Whatever really old stuff, like the pyramids, used to be like covered in marble and would like glow. I think it had white marble all over it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. It used to be this crazy glowing white fucking thing. It was, but they, I think they took all the marble off for some other reason. Well, things used to have color in the past. You see statues from the past and you think, oh, I guess everything in the past was just like these white, you know, grayish things. It's like, no, mm-hmm. shit was painted. People would paint things. It had color, but as it moves through time, the color gets sapped out of it. And so it's like you're, when you look at something from the past, it's like you're looking at something that's been pulled up out of this vast depth. And like the, when you pull a fish out of a vast depth, it'll like inflate and die. Well, shit right. from the past is the same way, right? And like, and you look at it and you're like, this is from another dimension. Like, I'm looking at a thing that was in a completely different reality, a reality where there weren't cars, a reality where you could go down to the pharmacy and say, hey, man, do you think I could get some tincture?
Could you mix me up some fresh tincture of opium, please?
Yes.
And no you, problem, sir.
Yes. And your horse is tied up outside, you know, and you would like take your opium and put it in your satchel and get on your horse or get in a carriage and ride back to your place heated by some by like a fireplace and lit by like candlelight and drink fucking opium. William Burroughs writes a whole beautiful essay about it. But it's not just the drug part that I'm fascinated with. It's everything. Like, our assumption is that this time that we're in right now is incredible, and it is. But then when you mm-hmm. like just get away from cars for a weekend, you know, get and yeah. and experience what that's like, and you're like, I don't, this place is great, but fuck.
I think the big difference is, and what a lot of people who write about that kind of stuff talk about, is it just at that time things were good, but also things, energy and maybe like you could say status or things had more gravity in terms of what you had to deal with. So
right.
things just meant so much more. Like transportation was so, it took so much effort that when, I mean, everything took just more, simply more effort. So it meant something. Like if you were a person who was smart enough to be a doctor, if you were a person who was had enough, enough gumption, enough, like worked hard enough to be, I'm trying to think of some job, but something that's like, that I feel like there's, you could say that because of cheap energy, because I feel like everything always goes back to energy and the cost of it. When it's really cheap, it cheapens everything else around it to the point where things level out and things have less value because they intrinsically have less value because they're not, the effort it takes to acquire or maintain or do something is just less.
Right.
So it's like back then you think about some big hotel. Like, it has to be kept up. Like, there's like a scrapbook by some guy. I can't think he wrote it, but basically it's about all the things that man has made and what they would be like, just, you know, different increments of years afterwards after they've been destroyed. It's like the world without people.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because it's stuff's going to go away. Stuff will just deteriorate almost instantly. Like, on like a cosmic scale, it's almost instant. But right. if you look at it on like a human scale, like in someone's lifetime, most things that you think of like, oh, this is a monolith, this will be there forever. Like, yeah, it'll be there forever as long as someone is always tending to it. Someone is forever constantly polishing it and cleaning it and doing all this shit to it. Even if it's just a big old fucking rock. Well, maybe a big old rock and rock, but like everything deteriorates unless it's maintained. And that's the thing. It's like someone has to do that.
Yeah, and eventually it's going to go from private to public too, right? Like right. that's a thing that happens. It's like whenever you go into these vast mansions that have become tourist spots.
Yeah.
And it's like you think like, fuck, man, we're in the time where places like this, we scurry through it like ants taking pictures and like imagining what it must have been like. But people used to live here. You know, mm-hmm. and now we just kind of swarm through these places, these structures, like walking through the rib cages of like dead dinosaurs or something, you know?
I was in this hotel in South Africa. When Britt came to visit, we went out to this little town. It's like a wine town called Stellenbosch. It's like outside of Cape Town, about 40 minutes. It's like a really quaint little university wine vineyard place. And the hotel we stayed at was from like 17, it was really old, like 1758 or something, right? And it's one of those things where you realize, like, the way things work in places like that, they used to have a rhythm for a reason, because it's, you would go there, you would eat food, you'd have all your meals at the hotel, because the hotel wasn't just a place you stayed. It was like, there's the guy who works there, who does literally anything you need to have done to be taken care of for you. And there's, like, they would call you for dinner, time to come down for dinner here now, or do you have a place? Like, you basically couldn't walk in and out of that place without having interaction with the person who runs it. And they're going to be like, we had to lie to them about dinner because we didn't want to have dinner there, because it's like, you feel like you're actually offending someone.
Wow.
Because it's this thing where it's obviously a modernized hotel, but it's still this thing where it goes off of those old rules where you have like a turndown service, and there's like all this crap is just this old world luxury that was there because there was no other way to have it. You couldn't get that stuff any other way but except through the service of like the hotel.
It's nuts, and it's all gone. Mm-hmm. It's all gone. It's gone, man. We live in the age of safety now. This is the era of safety. We've entered into this ridiculous age of trying to protect ourselves from every form of injury, from every form of emotional injury, physical injury, everything. Like, it's crazy how safe we've become, and it's terrible. And it's paradoxical, you know, when you start realizing safety is dangerous in its own way.
It's why people, it's all these things that are happening now. Like you know, I have had ulcerative colitis for a long time. I had my colon taken out because of it. But I got that maybe 20 years ago now. I was diagnosed with it. So, but now ulcerative colitis is something where I see commercials. They call it UC because, you know, you don't want to say ulcerative colitis. Say, if you're just suffering from UC,
right?
It's a really common thing now. But I think the reason it's more common is because the food we eat is so fucking clean now that there's some doctors who think it's an autoimmune disease. Huh. Where basically it's your body attacking itself because it has nothing else to fight. So you get all these problems with your bowels. And also it's like some people think it's a stress thing too. It's probably a combination of the two. So either way, if just one of those is true, something's wrong. But if both of them are true, it's definitely like super, it's very indicative of modern times, being that the food we eat is just way too clean, and way too, the monoculture we eat is so clean that our bodies have not adjusted to that. And also just the amount of stress people have, because it causes what's it called, like the symptoms that come from that, or they manifest themselves through physical symptoms even though it's a mental thing.
Dude, I bet if we traveled back, I bet if there was time travel, if you went back in time, you would just die within 2 days.
Oh, you would fucking be so dead. You would be microorganisms would destroy you. I mean, think about just the thing that happened with the American Indians, how they were all killed from just one, basically one disease, right? Pretty much smallpox is the one, right? Smallpox is the blanket disease.
Yes.
I'm not sure if, I think, and that just decimated basically an entire population of people.
We would have
that's
to,
just from continents.
If we were going to time travel, we would have to time travel in hazmat suits.
Yeah. Or you have to travel like 10 years at a time and stay there for like 6 weeks to acclimate, and you have like diarrhea the whole, you know what it'd be like fucking climbing Mount Everest. You know, you have to go up and stay at base camp for like 2 months just so your head doesn't explode.
Whoa. So time travelers would have to go like a decade back, hang out there for a year, another decade, hang out for a month or whatever, another decade, hang out for a month, and just gradually go through the different like, or you would have to like go to the, you would have to figure out a way to go to the time period that you wanted to go to, kidnap a person, bring them back here, and then create facts. Yeah.
steal their microbiome and replicate it. And
dude,
you know,
is that
like,
what UFOs
like the body
are?
The same size.
Is that what all the probing medical shit? It's time travelers from the future coming back to like get our to inoculate themselves so they don't have to wear the fucking like whatever the suit is. So they can come
That's
back.
That's
got to
be it. They're here already. They've got the. They've got what they need. So they're just among us. They're wearing. It's like you know when a body of the same size
enters like, your body. Like,
it's that kind of thing. I think that's what it is.
Dude, this idea is so like, I don't even know why, but I just keep thinking about like, fuck, man, time travel. Like how, you know, like when you're a kid, you see a picture of a dinosaur and you get that a specific poignant sadness.
Yeah.
Because you're like,
you never
I'll
can.
Never
you can
see
never.
That.
You can never ride a triceratops.
You'll never ride a triceratops. You'll never see a sea dinosaur engaged in a bloody battle with another sea dinosaur under like the skies that they would paint dinosaurs in, always thundering and lightning and meteors are always crashing. But
unless like it's a
what is that?
Jurassic Park.
Oh, Jurassic Park. Right. But that would suck. That's, you know, yeah. I don't want to see a fucking stegosaurus in a cage. I want to fucking go back and see a stegosaurus eating fucking cud while getting ripped to shreds by velociraptors or whatever. But so I was thinking like, fuck, man. Like, what if there was a way? Oh, this reminds me. Okay. This reminds me. So it's like basically the same idea, but so, okay, this is my new theory on time travel, right? Like, so one version of it is this idea that we live the same life over and over again, right? So, mm-hmm. like, basically, that which is always will be. Once you've burrowed through time with this particular life that you're in, you create a kind of track, right? A circular track starts with your birth, ends with your death, but it's like it's the two are the exact same thing. You die, you just get you die and you get popped out of your mom's vagina as a child in the same life, and it goes on and on and on forever and ever and ever. And that's what deja vus are. When you have a deja vu, it's like a little like wait, how many I've done this a many times, right? Mm-hmm. So this, if you like are purely a habitual person, then you will go through the same loop basically with very little change, right? But if you break out of your pattern, then your loop becomes a spiral. You start like going, you begin to like spiral out of the repetitive life pattern and moving upwards into like a different part of the universe, basically into a different part of the multiverse. So this is the thing I've been thinking. The next time that you are about to get into a really bad fight with someone, or like something bad's about to happen interpersonally with someone else, right? And right. You're about to be a dick, is what I'm saying. The next time you're about to be a dick, right? If you stop and feel, you will realize you're getting pulled into a runnel. This is something Rupert Sheldrake talks about, but you're
a runnel.
That's a
cool word.
You're
like
getting
word.
Pulled into a runnel. You're getting pulled into a chasm or a kind of like something that you've carved out by repeating the same shitty thing over and over again for millions of lifetimes, right? So, which is why when you're about to do something shitty, you can actually feel yourself getting pulled into it as though you're walking downhill, because you're walking down a slope into the exact same thing that you've done for a billion lifetimes, right? So If you're about to do it and you don't do it, then you are suddenly carving a new groove into your incarnational cycle. You know what I mean? And then that makes it so that you're going into a spiral instead of a circle. So it's a form of time travel. In other words, right now you can look at yourself and think, oh shit, it's me, Johnny Pemberton, 2017. Oh fuck, okay. All right, I've gone back.
I suck.
You don't suck.
Oh, shit. It's me. I suck.
I love... Do you ever do that? You ever pretend that you've traveled into your own incarnation from the future? Like, you just suddenly... But you have amnesia, so you don't remember who you were in the future. But you, like, just stop for a second and look around and go, ah, 2017. Technological civilization. Okay. Okay. I don't remember why I'm here or who I am, but I appear to be in the body of a 43-year-old man with one ball. Whoops.
I haven't done that. Maybe I should try that.
Try it, because it gives you permission to live your whole life over again. Or, like, it gives you permission to live your life as though you're a time traveler from the future that just landed in your body.
So, like, a body of the same size.
Yeah, basically, you've entered into a body.
You're just trying to figure things out, like, make sense of what's going on. Like, okay, apparently I like this. I like wool blankets, and I enjoy collecting reggae records.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it. What you do. Yeah, you look around like, okay, the being whose body I've entered appears to really enjoy technology. He is, I guess, likes to do music, but I don't know how to fucking play music, but there's a lot of musical instruments around, you know, shit like that. It's really fun to do. It's a fun experiment, you know. And then the next time, and then when you're like around people and you look at the way they're acting around you, you can kind of think, oh, this person has been affecting people in this way. Let's see what happens if I decide to treat them with more love because I'm not that person anymore. It just gives you, it's a trick so that you can live an entirely new life, you know, so that you can, as they say,
God entered into my body like a body my same size, like me floating into you or you floating into me.
You know?
It's the same size.
If for those of you wondering what the fuck that is, Johnny and I have, I was showing Johnny this thing on the internet that's like kind of sad, but also really fascinating.
And scary.
And
very
scary. And scary. But it's a guy who has made a bunch of YouTube. You just look up God entered into my body like a body, my same size.
Same size.
But it's, you know, he needs like this is somebody who probably needs some medicine or something.
Maybe some medicine, maybe like a good drink. Maybe there's a lot of things going on there. He definitely does not need a haircut, I'll say that much.
Yeah, he doesn't need, he's got a good, but
the
you
haircut
know
is good.
He's a this it's a pretty interesting thing. Anything on YouTube under 500 views is pretty interesting to me, and this is a series of videos that
it's so hard to find that shit now. I feel like they don't, YouTube does not want you to find that stuff. Because it goes against their profit margin for you to find something that's really novel and interesting that's not being monetized.
Well,
he found the unmonetized video. Get him off there.
There's a few
that
tricks.
Video has not been monetized.
I know some tricks. There's some tricks.
You do?
Yeah, you can, when you're filtering YouTube videos, start filtering by like just uploaded today or this week. You know, and then you can start finding some precious gems.
Cool trick too is to look up, search things by, because a lot of cameras, like different cameras, will upload something as a default, like 0041 CNP. It's like a whatever the company does. So it's a default upload. So a lot of times it'll just be, there's probably hundreds of thousands of videos that are labeled as 000.MP4 or some shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hunt them down.
That's a good one.
Find them. Yeah, find these precious unviewed. There's actually a subreddit, which is like unpopular YouTube videos, but it kind of, it's a truly a hit or miss proposition, you know? But
when it hits, it hits.
But, you know,
the main thing I want to know, then I got to ask you this right now. And you tell the truth.
Okay,
because
I'm
this is something that is really put you in the spotlight. You're on Fox and Friends once a week talking about this. This is what we gotta know. Are you implying that Barack Obama is responsible for the murder of JonBenet Ramsey?
Yeah.
In so many ways, yes. Barack Obama... I cannot say and commit libel. I cannot say, quote, Barack Obama murdered JonBenet Ramsey, end quote. I cannot say that. But if someone else were to say that in my presence, I would look at them.
Let me say it. Barack Obama murdered JonBenet Ramsey. What do you have to say about that?
Okay, I'm not going to say anything to you right now. I'm going to take you by your left hand with my pinky finger, also known as the radial six.
Okay.
And I will take that and I will bend it at a 90-degree angle, and I will point to it with my right hand, and I'll show you. And I'll look at you in your left eye, and then I'll look at both your eyes, and I'll look at your left eye again, and I'll say, come with me. And when you do, you understand that I am showing you a universal Sumerian form of agreement that is basically telling you, yes, you have spoken a truth that is universal. I am understanding that in a wordless fashion and need you to know that I know, but not to let others know that I needed to know that you knew that I know.
I do not want to put you in danger. I do not want you to be taken out by Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama's legion of elite death-dealing assassins. But let's just say, we don't even have to talk about JonBenet Ramsey. Let's talk about a little girl whose name was Sally Williams. And imagine that her murder was not solved, and it became a national headline story because she used to be a pageant girl, and I love pageants, but that's another podcast. Here's what I want to know. If this little girl was murdered by one of the presidents of the United States of America, how would he have gone about doing this murder, and what are your theories on why he has not been caught?
Well, I believe there's a number of theories that could be exercised at this point. When someone like that chooses to engage in ritual, they have a lot of people who support that because they are themselves dependent upon the outcome of that ritual.
Okay.
It's much the same way as employees will often cover for their boss because they know if the boss goes down, so will the company. And when the company goes down, so does their job, livelihood, family, and whatnot. So what's going to happen is a president has a very unlimited means of with people in which to employ. And what a president would do, someone like Barack Obama, has probably an excess of 60 to 70 unnamed, faceless people who have been procured for him to do things that can only be done by those with no name, no face, no smell, no DNA presence in the sense that we understand DNA. So these people can do things that others cannot simply by the virtue that they literally leave no trace.
But in your book, could I just stop you there? Titled, I'm not saying the president killed JonBenet Ramsey, but if he did, this is how he would have done it. You talk about this idea that the presidents are granted by the Illuminati the ability to burrow through the earth, and that connecting the White House to their tunnels and like mole burrows that many, many presidents have burrowed underneath the White House, and at night they do terrible things all around this great nation, not just killing JonBenet Ramsey, and I'm not saying that he did or that you're saying he did, but doing other malevolent things, and that most vanishings and unprosecuted murders are directly related to tunneling presidents. How did you know this is true? It sounds crazy if you ask me.
Well, this is something that I can't go into great detail about, but let me say that I've been very lucky to have been born on the on the 9-6 load line. And if you're familiar with 9-6 load lines, there's something that are referenced in many books of the Old Testament. Yes. There's a book of the Old Testament called Shanved. You will not recognize that
I've
word.
I've never seen that in my Bible.
Exactly. It's not in any Bible that's available other than through special procurement. And typically when you acquire the book of Shanved, it's not even listed or described to you as being a book of the Bible. But let me assure you, it is.
Well, and you can't, sir.
Yes.
You can't just say a book is a book of the Bible. There are a certain number of books, and that is the Bible. I was raised a Christian. I know what is in the Bible, and the book of Shanved sounds like something straight out of an evil tome, a grimoire. And when you say that name, it gives me goosebumps. And whenever I get goosebumps, I know that evil is involved.
Well, let me say this to you then. If you get goosebumps from something, maybe you should consider that it could be more than just evil. It could just be something that's causing an impactful interest in your environment, possibly creating a micro load line on your current geographic location.
That makes sense.
And these load lines, they do not follow Fibonacci number sequences.
Okay.
So they can pretty much be anywhere, any time, almost like sort of a translateral ghost of sorts. So that being said, the information that I acquired to learn about the things that I have written about came to me through places that, well, I literally cannot describe, as the language is not there if you haven't been proxy to Shanved.
Oh, dear God, hang on a second.
I can see a spider right now, but that spider and I cannot communicate.
Something's burrowing up from my floor. Oh, God, it's a president!
Why have you told them the secret of my burrowing holes? Listen to me. Why have you told them the secret of my burrowing holes? Why have you shown them the secret of my burrowing holes? Why have you shown them the secret of the burrowing holes? Why have you shown them the secret of the burrowing holes? You were instructed to never show them the secrets of the burrowing holes. You were instructed to never show them the secrets of the burrowing holes. Why did you show them the secrets of the burrowing holes? Why did you show them? Why did you show them the secret of the burrowing holes? Why did you show them? Why did you show them? Why did you show them the secret of the burrowing holes?
Okay, I'll make an attempt to show the secret of a burrowing hole.
Why did you show them the secret of the burrowing holes?
It's something that I, again, cannot begin to describe, because if I do, I'll put myself and all the people who are living in this current area, this thing that we're experimenting with.
You are going to cause many deaths.
Death is but a burrowing hole itself. Death is a burrowing hole.
Death is a burrowing hole.
Death is a burrowing hole.
Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a burrowing hole.
Death is a burrowing hole.
Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a burrowing hole. Death is a
thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Johnny. Are you going to be doing any shows coming up?
No shows coming up.
Hey, who is this?
This is Dick or Troy talking on behalf of Johnny Pemberton here.
Hey, Dick or Troy, love your show, man. So what's going on with you? Do you have any shows coming up?
I got a show July 2nd at the Satellite in Los Angeles. You can see that first Sunday of every month at the Satellite in Los Angeles. You can come on down. We pitch a real fit up there. It's a real fun one.
Great. Guys.
Otherwise, you know.
Oh, hey. Hey, what's up? Sorry. Thanks, Dicker. Hey, Duncan.
Hey, Johnny.
Yeah, you know, I got to go run some errands right now, actually. But you should check out, Jim.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I love you, Johnny. And I'll have all the links to find Dick or Troy and Johnny Pemberton at DuncanTrussell.com.
And you can check out Live to Tape if you want to.
Check out his podcast.
Yeah!
Okay, I'm stopping recording. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Johnny Pemberton. Much thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. And much thanks to you for listening. If you like this stuff, show your support. Subscribe to us on Patreon. Give us a nice rating on iTunes. And keep listening. Thanks. I'll see you guys real soon. Hare Krishna.